Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. This is Eric Fisher. I'm excited this week to bring you Jay Baer. He is of the site Convince and Convert. He is a social media consultant, a content consultant, and does a lot of social media speaking. Now, I've had the privilege of seeing him speak about 3 or 4 times live, and it's always been not just the nuts and bolts and the, you know, how to do social media the right way. He's just a great guy. And so I think you're going to really like what he talks about here with balancing doing social media, much like the Michael Stelzner episode, but in a different angle of how to, you know, be somebody who's writing books and blogging and speaking and running a business that's consulting for social media all at the same time. And so we'll get into the episode right away. But for just a second, I wanted to let you know this episode is brought to you in part by GoToMeeting by Citrix. You know, no matter what part of your life you're thinking about, you always have to have meetings. It's where you share ideas. It's where you think about what problems you have and you solve them and you create solutions. You have to communicate. But if those people that you need to meet with to talk through these things aren't all in the same place, then you need to find a solution. One of the best solutions is GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Some of the benefits of using GoToMeeting is that you can share screens. There's built-in HD video conferencing, so you can see each other's faces and read some of those nonverbal cues that don't always make it through just purely textual conversations through email or text or instant messages. And you can connect with a number of different devices, whether that's a laptop, a PC, an iPad, or even an iPhone or Android device. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Remember, use the promo code PODCAST. GoToMeeting, meeting is believing. Well, this week it's my great pleasure to introduce Jay Baer. He is a social media consultant, content consultant, and even a social media speaker, among many other things. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thanks very much for having me, Eric. It's a pleasure.
So first off, I want to say, for as much emphasis you put on being hype-free on Convince and Convert, Jay Baer has always struck me as sounding like a rapper's name.
Very nice. You know, it's a interesting side note there. My name, as you might suspect, is actually Jason. And for the first year or so of my social media career, I actually went by Jason, and all my bios said Jason Baer and things of that nature. But I actually changed it for a couple of reasons. One, my Twitter account was always Jay Baer, and all my friends and family have called me Jay since I was a little tiny kid, so it was a comfortable transition. But also, there are a number of other people by the first name of Jason in the social media community. Jason Falls, Jason Keith, etc., Jason Konopitsky.
Right.
There are far fewer named Jay. So from a branding and kind of has more of a ring to it perspective, I actually changed my name after I'd been in the business for a year or so.
Now, you don't mean legally change. You're just saying you're going by your nickname, right?
That's right. Going by my nickname, and I use that.
That would be very weird. I was like, I legally changed my name for social media reasons.
If I was going to legally change my name for social media reasons, it would be to something far more awesome than Jay.
So it's a differentiator is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, I know with all the different things that I want to touch on with you, I want to start off with the average question that I ask everybody, which is, with all these things you're juggling, in an ideal world, how do you start your day?
Well, I feel like my world is fairly ideal as it is. That's kind of the idea, right? Is to create the environment that you want. And this is my fifth company that I have started. And so each time I do that, I try and create an environment that is closer to ideal for myself. But even though I have read countless blog posts and books that say you shouldn't, I wake up and check email within the first 5 seconds of being alert.
Okay. Why do you do that? Because I've had people here on this show, as well as I've heard others say that, don't check it. Why do you choose to?
I think partially it's the nature of the work that we do at Convince and Convert. Most of our clients are either corporations or agencies, and we are on retainer with them to help with all things social, content, and digital. We are essentially social media whisperers and are literally on call. So We, between myself and the rest of my team, we staff 14 hours a day in terms of answering customer questions and helping our clients with all manner of things. And so it certainly helps to get a jump on, all right, here's the things that I actually need to address in the first part of the day versus most of what I get when I wake up is spam or email newsletters or things I don't really care about. But at least it allows me to isolate the first batch of things I need to address in the first hour or two.
Okay. So it's more give you a context to what your priorities for the day are going to be based on your work, not someone else's.
Yeah. It's more of a triage mechanism. And,
gotcha.
And based on how we operate and the kind of services we provide, that's sort of the way it goes, right? So all the planning in the world can be done, but because we are in the business of helping people with whatever they need help with, our ability to execute on that plan is very much circumstantial. So there are days when I think, wow, I've got a bunch of actual time in the middle of the day that I could work on a book, or I could work on an ebook, or I could work on a presentation, or work on something else. But then that time can disappear quite quickly with a couple of client inquiries.
Okay. So then after email, are you saying you're checking email first thing in the morning while you're at home?
Yeah, I work from home, so that keeps it
free. Okay.
But I'm actually checking in bed.
Nice.
I don't even stand before
All right.
I email.
So then you get out of bed, and what's next?
Get out of bed, and then I go Twitter, Facebook, birthday greetings. Make sure I get that handled before I forget. And then I go read a couple of online newspapers, and then start checking through blogs and other things that I may want to curate or tweet throughout the day.
Okay. And how are you setting that up? Do you believe in scheduling tweets and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no question. I'm an investor in Buffer
and use
Buffer consistently. I use Argyle Social for all of my own work and in promoting my own blog and webinars and speaking engagements and other things that I'm doing. But I use Buffer universally to schedule tweets and Facebook status updates and LinkedIn posts, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, those are two great tools. I don't know if you knew this. I actually do social media at Indiana Wesleyan University
right. As
my day job. So that's one of those things. It's like, well, you've got to schedule, or you can't have tweets go out at, or, you know, social posts, I guess, better broad spectrum, at times where people are going to most see them, or more opportune times, and not have them all come out at, like, you know, here's five tweets in course of a half hour. So
absolutely, you know, you have to pay attention to it. It can be a little dangerous to have everything queued up too far in advance. And you look at events like Hurricane Sandy and things like that, where you've seen some tweets leak out in the last day or so that maybe are a little bit tone deaf. It's like, you know, maybe that was scheduled in advance, and possibly you should have unscheduled that given the circumstances.
Yeah. Okay. So I've seen you speak, let's see here, about three or four different times live. And I wanted to say that the words social media consultant often have a bad taste in people's mouths, but you give social media consulting a good name.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I know that one of the talks I saw was at Blog World, where we were both there, and you talked a bit about Convince and Convert, and how it started, and then how it kind of grew, and some of the changes you made along the way. And I'd be interested in hearing, you know, some of that story, as well as how you kind of adapted it to grow. I mean, it started off with just you. Is that right?
Yeah. The Convince and Convert blog at convinceandconvert.com has now been up for 4.5 years. I started in July of 2008, and I had been a writer my whole life, but I was primarily a magazine columnist, and I wrote a lot of business columns for different business publications and things like that, but I'd never really done blogging. And so when I started this company, when I started Convince and Convert, I realized that the frequency of publication and the nature of thought leadership had changed, and that you had to be out there more often with shorter form work. And so I decided to write the blog. And so for the first couple of years of the blog, I wrote personally three or four posts a week, every week. And in that time, sort of developed a voice and a little bit more clarity around who my audience is. Part of that is just trial and error, right? And what I tell clients all the time is what you think your blog is about and for whom you think you're writing initially is not what your blog will ultimately be about, and will not be necessarily for whom you're writing down the road. All good blogs, I think, morph over time and evolve based on feedback from the readership. And Convince and Convert was initially very much focused on agencies and how agencies can make the digital transformation and offer digital services more profitably to their clients, et cetera. And we still write about that some, and we still have a lot of work in that industry. But I found that when I focused more on social media and less on sort of pan-digital issues, that I got a lot more reaction and a lot more response. And so started to do more of that and more of that and more of that. And then all of a sudden, it sort of became a social media blog. And the rest, as they say, is history. But it was by no means an overnight circumstance. I show, and sometimes when I do presentations about blogging, I show my actual Google Analytics traffic chart over the 4.5 years that we've had the blog, and it's very much a slow and steady climb throughout that entire period. There was no sort of a detonation, if you will. It was just, you know what, if you get more people on the blog today than you did yesterday, eventually that's going to work out.
So you would say maybe part of success in this case, or in many cases really, is just continually showing up.
Yeah. My biggest peeve with bloggers is this party line that's out there that, you know, I want to write a blog post when I'm inspired.
Mm, yeah.
Well, you know what? You're not going to be inspired that often, right? So I always say perspiration trumps inspiration. And the best way to be a successful blogger is to actually blog. Because even if it's not the single best blog post you've ever written, everything you ever write or publish has some net present value to your business. It's going to continue to generate traffic. It's going to continue to generate backlinks. It's going to continue to generate social shares. It's going to continue to generate comments. The great thing about content marketing, and one of the reasons why we're doing a lot more content marketing consulting now, is that it pays an information annuity that no other form of marketing really pays, right? If you stop advertising on Google AdWords, the value of that advertising drops almost to zero the day you stop paying them. But blogging, or any sort of content creation, ebooks, slideshare, podcasting, what have you, pays an information annuity well into the future. The atomic half-life of content is longer than any other form of marketing. And that's why I think it's ultimately a very, very efficient way to roll. It's hard to do it at the onset. And I calculated once how many hours I've spent blogging, and it scared the crap out of me. I was like, man, I could have done something particularly useful with my time. But then you start thinking, you know what, it is useful. And all the things that we've been able to accomplish in this company would not have happened without the blog.
Yeah. Well, and then you're building up that backlog of what a lot of people term evergreen content, where it's still valuable. Like a lot of your old stuff is still stuff that if people search for it, right, or it meets their need, they're going to find it. So,
well, we retweet it as well. We have a program called Nights and Weekends that my assistant handles, and once a night and once on Saturday, once on Sunday, she goes back through the archives and tweets out greatest hits blog posts to sort of recirculate stuff. And some of them are 6 months old or a year old or 2 years old. And we do that consistently. And the amount of traffic that just that little program generates is really remarkable.
Okay. So then as you're growing, you've gotten this kind of snowball effect of, okay, you've accumulated a lot of posts. The snowball's getting bigger. At what point did you start adding more people, and for what reason did you start adding people to the Convince and Convert team?
Well, I really added people to the team, and there's 7 of us now, to handle client work.
Okay.
So it wasn't necessarily adding team members to create content. It was really to handle increasing demands from clients, which is obviously a great problem to have. And then when my first book, The Now Revolution, came out, it sort of catapulted the number of speaking engagements that I was offered into sort of a different level, which is fantastic. And of all the things that I do, I like speaking the best. But that, again, sort of takes you off the front lines in terms of being able to help clients as much as you used to. So it was really a workflow issue for me. But then I said, geez, we've got all these people on the team now who are all very, very smart and very experienced in social and digital. Maybe we should have them create some content as well. So we set up a program where each of our team members create one blog post a month, which then augments what I'm doing. And then we also rolled out a fairly robust guest posting program where we solicit guest posts from trusted authors. And if somebody approaches us with an idea that we think is disproportionately brilliant, we will sometimes run those as well. So we actually expanded the number of posts that we write or publish on the blog per week, but the percentage of those that I personally write has gone down significantly.
So you've kind of augmented your requirements. So how many are you doing on average now?
I do one a week.
Okay. But the blog still posts daily, is that right?
Almost daily.
Almost daily.
Yeah, we usually do 4 or 5 a week.
Okay. When it was just you, were you doing one a day at one point? Or
I never did one a day. I did 3 a week personally for about 3.5 years.
Okay. And then as the other team members stepped into the
blogging role, so to speak. Yeah. And so it went from 3 a week from me to 4 or 5 a week, but only one from me. And so it really became, even though it's always been Convince and Convert, fundamentally it became the Convince and Convert blog, not the Jay Baer blog.
Right.
And that was scary. That was a hard decision to make. And I'd like to say it was made out of, you know, this amazing strategic acumen, but it was really made out of necessity. It was really like, look, man, there's no way I can write 3 blog posts a week anymore. I just don't, I can't carve out that much time. And I was like, wow, this could be the death of this blog. And as it turns out, it was quite the opposite. Traffic to the blog and most of the other success metrics that we pay attention to are up, you know, 20 to 25% since we did that, which is fantastic for us. But also a little disheartening because apparently people don't care about whether or not I write the blog post. They just care about whether there is a blog post. So not necessarily great for the ego, but good for the business.
Yeah. Now, did that coincide having the team members start blogging as well to free up time for you to go speaking? Did that coincide with the Now Revolution coming out?
No, it actually went the other way. So the book came out and I managed through sort of a Herculean effort to do both. Through about the end of last year, about this time last year, I'd finished the full book tour and the book is doing well and all that. And I said, you know what? We're going to have to make some resource changes here, or we're just going to have to fundamentally tell everybody no. So around the beginning of this year is when we started to expand the team even more. So we sort of went from myself and my assistant Jess, and then we sort of added a couple more people and to the point we're at now. So and we may need to add some more resources in the first quarter again.
So then you've got the consulting and the speaking and the blog and the book that came out. How did Social Pros podcast come about?
Yeah, I love the podcast. It's one of my very favorite projects. Probably my favorite thing that I work on consistently. It's kind of a funny story. So Argyle Social, who we mentioned earlier, has been a sponsor of Convince and Convert for a year or so, and great guys to work with. Really like them and like their product. And Eric Boggs, who's their CEO and founder, have spent some time together personally at South by Southwest and other places, and we just sort of have a good rapport. And around this time last year, maybe a little later, Thanksgiving, I think, last year, something like that, he just sent me a note and said, hey, you should do a podcast, right? Why aren't you doing that? You really should do a podcast. You'd be good at it, et cetera, et cetera. And we should do it together. And I really had not ever thought about that. I've done a lot of video interviews and things on the blog in the past, but I'd never really thought about a podcast. And so I sort of let that marinate for a little bit over the holidays. And I thought, you know what? We should do that. That would be kind of fun. And I understand the power of interview. I don't know if you know this story, Eric, but one of the ways that I sort of made my bones, so to speak, is that when I first started out in social media and nobody knew who I was, not that really anybody does now, but even to a larger degree, I started a program called the Twitter 20, which was a live interview series on Twitter. In fact, I was the first person to ever do an interview live on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And I would interview sort of social media luminaries, right? Chris Brogan and Gary Vaynerchuk and Joe Jaffe and Scott Monty and a lot of other people, David Armano. And it was a live interview where I would ask them just 20 questions in a row. So it almost was the precursor to the sort of Twitter chats that we have today.
Yeah.
And I would do that every couple of weeks and then write blog posts with full transcripts. And then I would package it up as an ebook and did this whole content thing. And that is what sort of got me on the radar for a lot of people. So I understood the power of the interview format from that experience. And so when Eric said, you ought to do a podcast, I said, yeah, you know what? I think that would be interesting. And I wrote a blog post on the site and asked my readers some questions about what would they prefer in terms of length and format and things of that nature, and got some good feedback, some crowdsourced feedback there. And then Eric and I rolled it out first part of the year this year, and we're on episode 41 this week. And it's been going great. Love it.
Well, and I kind of say that as a listener of that show, I love it too, especially because of my day job. But even people who aren't in social media as a job can really get a lot out of that, because you really are talking to people who are doing, well, like you say, you're talking to real people doing real work in social media. And so it's not just people who think they know what they're talking about. It's people actually, you know, in the trenches doing the work.
Yeah, that was when we thought about the strategy for the podcast. We looked at what else was out there, and there's a lot of great podcasts. And in fact, this year has really become the year of the podcast. There's been so many new ones started just in the last few months, and a lot of the new ones have asked Eric and I for advice. And so that's gratifying to see that we had a small role in sort of, you know, adding some fuel to the social media podcasting fire, which is kind of fun. But one of the things we really wanted to differentiate was, look, let's try and keep this as consultant-free as possible. Not because I don't want to talk to other consultants. The people who are in the trenches, people who are doing the kind of work that you're doing for brands, don't get talked to as much because they just don't have the public profile. They're not doing all the keynotes and the books and all those kind of things. And I feel like those are the more interesting stories. So that's what we try and focus on.
Okay. You also, aside from Social Prose, which is social and it's professional, it stands for professional, not like poetry. Although that'd be an interesting social media podcast.
I like
social,
that. The
social
greatest,
prose, yeah.
That would be tweets with iambic pentameter.
Yes. But you also are doing, from the site Convince and Convert, one social thing. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, One Social Thing is our newsletter project. It's onesocialthing.com, and that has also been an evolution over time. It mirrors the evolution of the blog as a whole. So my background is in web strategy and more specifically email marketing and landing page optimization and those kind of things. So I've been an email proponent for a long, long time. And so we've had an email newsletter, quote unquote, as part of Convince and Convert from day one. It used to be a regular weekly. And then we switched it for a while to a Monday and Friday product that we called the 3-2-1. And it was three social media stories that you should read, sent twice per week, Mondays and Fridays, at 1 o'clock. That's why it was called the 3-2-1. And 3-2-1 was really successful. It went great. But then I started thinking about, you know, everything's getting faster. Everything's getting shorter. Everybody has less time. There's this massive tsunami of content out there. What is the logical conclusion to this trend? And so I thought, you know what the logical conclusion is just one thing. Pick one thing and say, look, if you can only read one thing about social media or content marketing, this is the one thing that you should read today. And I thought, you know what, you can't outdo that framework, right? You can't say only read half a thing today, right? So I just felt like intellectually it had a nice spin to it. And so we switched to the One Social Thing a few months ago. And it also, just as an aside, it allows us to publish more frequently in a way that I hope isn't annoying, which gives our sponsors a little bit more exposure to our readership as well, which is nice for them. So we moved to One Social Thing, and literally that's it. It's you get an email every day from us that says, all right, this is the article that we think you should have read, and we curate that article from, you know, a wide variety of places and try and keep people up to speed on what's really going on. It's a little bit of a difficult editorial challenge, though, Eric, we've found in that we don't want to be mashable, right? You don't want to say, here's, you know, is it One Social Thing news, or is it One Social Thing kind of issues, or is it One Social Thing, this is the single greatest blog post written today? And so we continue to struggle a little bit with the editorial direction of One Social Thing. I think a lot of people like it. The results of it are pretty strong. Not overwhelmingly strong, but pretty strong. But it's still a work in progress in terms of, you know, what should be included as a One Social Thing. And we're working on it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you're kind of curating that, as well as how are you personally finding things, you know, what are your go-to sources, so to speak, for stuff that you want to tweet out or share with your audience?
it's funny. It used to be RSS, and I had the same conversation with Tom Webster from Edison Research the other day, and we were talking about a different issue, and he said, you know, I haven't used an RSS reader in like a year and a half. And I'm like, yeah, me neither. And I used to use an RSS reader multiple times a day, as I think many people did. But now I increasingly use Twitter, you know, as a finding mechanism. As sort of headline news for the digital age. So I have a lot of Twitter lists set up in Argyle Social for different people in different categories, clients and sort of social media types and content people and all that. And so I tend to scan the links that they're putting out there. I've got blogs that I know that I like and things that I'm particularly fond of. I subscribe to everything via email, right? And I'm still old school like that. So I get, I don't even know, 30 or 40 emails a day from different blogs or aggregator services. And so that's a good source. And then for one social thing, we actually have a Pinterest board where everybody on my team, it's a group board, can pin to it. And so we pin ideas for one social thing to the one social thing Pinterest board. And then my assistant Jess, who's our managing editor, picks the one for the day. She's the one who makes the final call on what goes in one social thing.
Nice. Is that a public board or is that private?
It's private.
Okay. I was going to say, I'd love to take a look at that board, but...
That could not be true. Let me investigate that. It's a good question. I should probably know that, but I don't.
Well, I mean, if they're all running the stuff the right way, you may not need to know.
Right. Well, I mean, I probably need to know, but there's only so many things that I want to know.
Yes.
Sort of like, it's private for
okay,
now.
Okay, good.
It's sort of like car maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, perfect example.
And as I said, this is my fifth startup professional services company. And one thing I learned in about 2005, 2004, was that, look, my nature is to want to try and control everything. But you end up doing yourself and the rest of your team a huge disservice if you operate like that, right? You got to find good people. Mm-hmm. And train them in how you want things done and just let them do it, right? You cannot micromanage everything because it just sucks your attention away from the big picture. And once I sort of made that mental leap, my life and my businesses have been substantially better as a result.
So if you can get the right people and train them to do the right things as close to how you would do them as possible, then you can step away and you can trust them.
Yeah, I think the other way I explain this to people is, look, you need to do only the things that you are uniquely qualified to do. If you're spending time doing things that other people on your team can do, then you're actually robbing yourself of opportunity.
Yeah, which actually is a great segue into only you, Jay Bear, can write your next book. And how are you bridging that into all this other stuff that you're doing now that you've gone back into book mode?
Yeah, actually, I just started book mode on Sunday a couple of days ago. So today will be day three of book mode. I'm writing this book in some ways the same way I wrote my half of the Now Revolution, in that I say, okay, here's about how many words this book is going to be. And I break it down into a daily writing goal. And so I will, you know, I do my job, my day job, if you will, hang with the kids, have dinner, get the kids settled in, and then I'll write for a couple hours every night, and then write for most of one of each of the weekend days. And I have discovered over time that apparently that's unusual, that most people can't write on command like that, but I can, so I do. So I've been doing research for the book for 2 or 3 months, but I should be able to write the book fundamentally in 4 or 5 weeks, which I'm told is also pretty quick. I'm doing a lot of speaking around the new book, which is called Utility, Why Smart Companies Sell More by Selling Less. And it's all about the notion of, what if your marketing was so inherently useful that people would pay you for it? That the way to differentiate now in this modern world where every company is screaming and shouting and tweeting and Pinteresting is not necessarily to be more clever or more viral or even more findable, but to be just useful. That if you are inherently useful, your customers will do your marketing for you. And we've got lots and lots of case studies in the book, and I'm really excited about it. But it is difficult. It's going to be a crazy few weeks, because it's like having a second job.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I discovered the first time, you know, the fun really begins once it's time to promote the book. So That's why we may be adding some additional staff resources next year, because my ability to do client stuff will be mitigated even more because I'll be on the road doing book promotion.
Well, hearing you talk about what the book is about, I know that that's just some of the standard stuff you talk about. So that's, I mean, that resonates with me right now. And so it's called, again, Utility.
Why are utility? Utility. Why smart companies sell more by selling less.
Nice. Now, when is that? You may not know, but when is that due out? Is there a goal for that?
Spring-ish. I don't have my book contract done yet. Okay. That should be finished. I'm doing it a little different this time. I'm sort of writing the book while I'm working on the contract. Typically, it goes the other way around. But I sort of had this, I shouldn't say hole, but opportunity in my schedule where I'm not traveling much between now and the end of the year. And so I said, if I'm going to write this thing, it needs to be in this window. So I'm writing it, and then we'll figure out the paperwork later. But it should be spring sometime, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll look for that. Would you say that one of the reasons why maybe it's not normal for other people is they do wait for that whole, I'm going to wait to write when I'm inspired, and you're just used to, you've done the research, and now you're just ready to perspire and get it done?
Yeah, absolutely. I have it all in my head. I just need to put it down now. And I tried to do some things just on the process side to make that easier this time. So I have created a keynote presentation of the speech. I did it for the first time at Blog Indiana, actually. That was the world debut of that presentation. And I have a recording, an MP3 file of that keynote. And then I'm a big user and proponent of SpeechPad, speechpad.com. And so I upload the MP3. They turn around, give me a written transcript of it. So now I've got 10,000 words of me giving the presentation, which I can use to incorporate into the book. And then I did, between my research assistant, Kim Korak, and myself, we did about 50 interviews for the book. And every single one of them we recorded via telephone or via Skype. And so same thing, I can take those files, upload them to SpeechPad, and then it transcribes it. So I have hundreds of thousands of words of interviews, phone interviews with people for the book. And so it just makes it a lot easier to drop those quotes in, as opposed to taking tons of notes and going through, five notebooks full of handwritten notes and trying to piece it all together. It's just much more efficient this way.
Yeah. You almost, in not just doing the research, part of your research was literally writing, because other people's words were being transcribed and you just drop, copy, paste them in. So you've actually been writing it without having to lift a finger, so to speak, digitally.
I'm also thinking about, because I've got, audio files, I have MP3 files of all these phone calls and stuff. And the transcript, I'm actually thinking about cleaning those up a little bit and maybe time releasing them in front of the book publication as sort of teaser material. So here's my interview with Clorox about their app. Here's my interview with McDonald's. Here's my interview with, whomever. It might be an interesting option.
That sounds really exciting. I'm really looking forward to hearing those if you do release it that way, but especially for the book. And I know that something else people might be interested in as we close is you are going to be speaking in January at New Media Expo. Is that correct?
I am. I'm going to be talking about that same topic, about utility.
Great. I will actually be speaking again. I'm going to be speaking about Facebook EdgeRank. So I will see you there.
Very nice. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good event. And I've got a lot of things going in January, which is great, but it's going to be an abrupt beginning to the year. I will not be easing into 2013.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I'm already trying to figure out, okay, how do I get away for a nice long Christmas vacation with family and stuff? So, well, in closing, I'd love for you to plug any and all of your stuff, of where they can find the blog, the podcast, all of that stuff.
If you go to convinceandconvert.com, which is our home base, that's the best place to get connected to everything else. And then if you subscribe to One Social Thing, onesocialthing.com, which is our daily email newsletter, you'll get one amazing story per day, and then we'll keep you up to date on all the other cool stuff that we're doing. We've got 3 ebooks I think we're rolling out between now and the end of the year, all kinds of other balls in the air.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Jay, for coming on the show, and it was great having you.
My pleasure. Thank you for the time.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I want to say thank you again to Jay Baer for joining me. Jay Baer, like you heard, will be speaking at New Media Expo, as well as myself. And you could come see us speak, really fairly inexpensive compared to other conferences. Please check that out at beyondthetodolist.com/NMX. The letters NMX. We'd love to see you there. And again, if you've enjoyed this show and all the episodes that we've been providing, please go to iTunes and go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating or review. Just let us know what you're doing, and even go to the site itself at beyondthetodolist.com and let us know what you think and any feedback. We'd love to hear from you, hear what you're getting out of the show. We'll talk to you later. Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. Find more great podcasts like How to Podcast, Clean Comedy, Once Upon a Time, Christian Worldview, and more at noodle.mx. Think, laugh, and succeed by subscribing to our podcasts at noodle.mx.
Hi, this is Daniel J. Lewis with Noodle Mix Network. Thank you for nominating our podcasts into the finalist positions at podcastawards.com. Now the easy but most important part starts. Please visit podcastawards.com every day, November 1st through 15th, to vote for our podcasts. Under comedy, vote for The Ramen Noodle. Under entertainment, vote for Once Podcast. And under technology, vote for The Audacity to Podcast. Please do this every day on podcastawards.com, November 1st through 15th, 2012, and your votes will help our podcasts. Thank you for your support. We really appreciate it.